Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoi, and this is The Exchange. It is summer movie season, and today on The Exchange, we are taking some time to talk about the box office offerings that you and our guests are looking forward to. From action and adventure to artful character-based films, we are looking at the variety of movies that are making a splash or are expected to when they come to a theater near you. What film did you love? Which ones are you looking forward to? And let's be honest, some might not be worth your time. Which ones are those? The number to call to join this conversation is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also shoot us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And here to talk with us about the summer movie season are Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press, Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College, and Barry Steelman, program manager at Red River Theaters. Thank you very much, everybody, for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks for having us, Peter.
So let's jump right in, and I guess we could start with you, Tom. What is the big movie that you consider a must-see right now?
A must-see for right now. Let's see. I think probably, and again, one of my qualifications for summer movies is you check your brain at the door and just go in and have a good time. And while I had a difficult time with some of the science behind this, I think Ant-Man and the Wasp is probably going to be the biggest crowd pleaser, the most fun, unless we get to it. I know we're going to be talking about movies aimed exclusively at kids, and I was quite surprised at one that opened recently with that one. But I think Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So what is what is that one about?
Ant-Man is Michael Douglas plays Henry Pym, who is a scientist kind of back in my era in the 60s, who invented this suit that could make you shrink into micro size. And he and his wife, Michelle Pfeiffer, we find out, was the Wasp originally. And since then, kind of set more in modern times, Paul Rudd plays in the original. And Barry may disagree with me with this. I didn't think necessarily you needed to see the first one in order to enjoy Ant-Man and the Wasp. I think it would help. But I don't think you necessarily need to have seen Ant-Man. Paul Rudd in that one breaks into Henry Pym's house and steals the suit because he's a small-time criminal, and then kind of colludes with Pym, with Michael Douglas's character, to go and fight crime. And so it's just Rudd brings a silly, kind of nonchalant, fun adventure time to the character. And I think that's what this film really brings to it. It's lots of action, high-paced stuff, and I think he has a lot of fun with it.
Okay. And Michael Pena. You didn't mention the Michael Pena.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, he's always a great side character.
Yeah, and what about you, Amy? Must see.
Well, so I'm going to go for the other Marvel movie, which was Avengers Infinity War. This was actually sort of the first movie. Summer came early at the movies this year. That was the last week of April. And so this movie is the bringing together of 10 years of Marvel storytelling. 10 years, you know, starting with Iron Man and going all the way through to Black Panther from earlier this year. And you've got all these characters, all these storylines coming together to fight Thanos, this villain we've been seeing on and off throughout some of the Marvel movies. I thought this movie did an extraordinarily good job. When you consider how hard it can be, Justice League, to bring together characters and make it work and stay true to the characters, I thought Avengers did a great job of that.
Okay, Avengers. And what about you?
I would go see, in fact, I did go see both that movies that Amy and Tom saw. I thought well of them, but Tom is right. I have to disagree with him. I think not seeing Ant-Man ahead of time left me a little bit in the dark as to some of the what some of the background of the characters were.
Okay. Well, these Marvel movies, it's tough, I think, to jump in. I don't think you could jump in with Avengers Infinity War. You would have to do a lot of homework first to understand who these people are and what their relationship is.
Yeah. No, I went to see Ant-Man a couple of days ago, and the person that I went with just got through. She said she watched several Marvel movies in order to try to build up to the point of realizing what was going on. I didn't have that advantage. And I looked at her at the end of it, and I said, at the beginning, I didn't know what the heck was going on here. This kind of left me at the door checking my brain, which I'll have to say, if you want to know what I'm going to recommend, where I work, we ask people to not check their brain when they go in. That sometimes can be a little dicey. But in case of this summer, looking at Won't You Be My Neighbor, I found that to be everything that I would look for in a documentary, everything I'd look for in a movie.
Let's talk a little bit about Won't You Be My Neighbor. This is the documentary on Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, and we have a little bit of a clip from the trailer of this documentary. Let's hear it.
Won't you be my neighbor? Well, I suppose it's an invitation. It's an invitation for somebody to be close to you. The greatest thing that we can do is to help somebody know that they're loved and capable of loving.
Okay, so Barry, did you stock boxes of Kleenex in the theater when you were showing Won't You Be My Neighbor?
It's right at the door when you leave, and that's not a lie.
But I mean, that's the reaction people have, Amy, it seems, to this film.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say, can I get the Kleenex
sure,
right now as
we
talk
over.
About it? I loved this movie. I thought it did a couple of things really well. It gives you the story of Fred Rogers, and you could tell, actually, from that clip, you know, in a summer movie season where everything is really fast and coming at you, it slows everything down and it gets you to really learn about this man, learn about specifically how he made a television show and how different it is. I have become a connoisseur, unfortunately, of young child television in the last few years. Mm-hmm. My kids watch a lot of Paw Patrol and Blaze and it's all really big and
Paw
loud.
Patrol, yeah.
His really brought it back down and gave kids space to think and feel and consider their feelings. And the movie just does a great job of showing that.
Yeah. I mean, why do you think this is catching on so well this year?
Well, you know, I think that's part of it. Showing this person and what he did and what there's a great scene. And a lot of people, when they see this movie, talk about this scene where he is in a Senate committee hearing. And there's this very blustery senator who doesn't want to give PBS funding. And he is just it's like a man standing in front of a tornado and holding up a hand and politely asking everything to calm down. That is what Fred Rogers does. And it is just amazing to watch. And, you know, all these conversations about civility that we have. This is an example of someone who is, you know, strong through politeness, strong through kindness. And that is just so amazing to watch.
I have to say, I haven't watched too many movies this year, but I did go to see that one at Red River not too long ago. And I was just blown away by how clear they made this person seem to me. It just made him present and also didn't spend too much time on the kind of nonsense criticism that folks did make of Fred Rogers back in his life. They mentioned it because it's a biography in a way, and you have to, but didn't spend a lot of time on that. Most of it was just on the kindness that this man emitted.
Well, and so often I think you see these documentaries like this that focus on how different the quote-unquote actor might be from his persona. Mm-hmm. In real life, he's really like this. I have two sons, one's 25, one's 17, and we never watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for some reason. I don't know why, but the doc showed me, one, not only how ingenuous the man was, but reminded me of what a really cultural phenomenon he was, how he impacted so many areas of our lives, even if you didn't watch the show. I thought it was a wonderful film.
Listeners, we're talking about movies today, and we want to know about the movie that's on your mind. Which did you see and really love? Which did you not enjoy? Which are you looking forward to? There are several scheduled to be released in the coming months. The trailers are out. They may have gotten you excited. Give us a call. Let us know. 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. The Mr. Rogers documentary is just one of many documentaries coming out soon. I don't know, this might be a specialty of Red River because you've also got the one on Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes, that played there very successfully for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just ending its engagement there tomorrow. And what's going to take its place as far as documentaries at Red River is a new film entitled Three Identical Strangers.
I saw the trailer for that. That's amazing.
It's about three men in 1980, 81, who, after being separated at birth, discover one another. And the impact that this discovery does to their lives and to the lives of those who were responsible for their upbringing.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Amy? Other documentaries you're looking forward to or you've seen and you really enjoyed?
Well, you mentioned RBG, and that is definitely one of my, best movies of the year so far. This is a documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It really looks at her whole life. The parts that I really enjoyed hearing her talk about her life. First of all, you want to feel lazy. Go watch this movie about this woman who is still exercising an hour every day. You know, I'm easy to say, oh, not today with the treadmill. She goes to the gym every day, is reading late into the night. And then you hear the story of her marriage to her husband, Martin Ginsburg, I believe, and just the way that they worked together on both their careers. You know, there were times when she was sort of leading in the home. And then as her career took off, you know, he was really the main caregiver. And it's such a great story. You know, both these documentaries, I would say, did a great job of giving you the life of the person and had a lot of really great interviews from friends and family that weren't just gushing, that kind of frankly got into their character. So that one also a big favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Tom? Documentaries to look forward to?
Well, I think I cast a shadow on my film department at Keene State College because I'm so mainstream Hollywood. That's my background. That's where I was trained. It's what I tend to watch. And so the documentaries that we've already discussed, both of which I've seen, are terrific. I end up, and it's a small venue, the Colonial Theater. Is pretty much the only one comparable to, like, Red River, where you're going to see something that you don't have to check your brain at the door. And so they get stuff new every week, and so I do my best to get there. Again, the two I think that we've already mentioned are the most solid, and then I end up, most of my doc viewing tends to be on download, and I know we're going to be talking about some of those things later.
Sure, Netflix shows coming up on The Exchange. We'll talk about those. In fact, if you've got one in mind, movies that you think you should tune to Netflix for, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. But again, we'll go to you, Barry, on this next question. Question about documentaries and why they seem to be more popular this year than next. Maybe I'm mistaken and it's just they're popular all the time and I just noticed this year, but maybe not. Are they more popular this year than ever?
I would say yes. They have indeed, the two that have been mentioned most prominently here, RBG and Mr. Rogers, they've even managed to be shown in commercial movie houses. Maybe not to the effectiveness that they might find an audience in a more independently oriented movie theater, but they have gotten away from that and into the commercial sector. And that's saying something, which usually translates into finding those titles in the top 10 or 12 movies that are playing around the country.
Mm-hmm. One of the documentaries I'm looking forward to seeing, I don't know if any of you have seen it. It may not even be out yet for a wide release, but the Robin Williams Come Inside My Mind. Has anybody seen that?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah, and that again, similar to my comments about Fred Rogers, when we lost Robin Williams, I always saw his films and I would watch stand-ups and things like that. But if you'd asked me while he was still around here, if I was a huge fan, I would probably say no. And I was struck at when he died about the level of influence in all areas of media, that he was so phenomenally strong. And so this documentary does a great job showing really the kind of struggles. We've seen the story before, but it was interesting to see the struggles that he went through to achieve his fame. And to what I took from the documentary was how he really cherished stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. and how that was something he would always go back to and always try to go back to. Do a movie here, but then when he left the set, after being on set for 14 hours, he'd run to a comedy club and do 2 hours there. It was a real interesting insight into him and the real kind of manic genius that he was.
Mm-hmm. Don't hurt yourself looking for it at a movie theater, though.
Yeah.
That's on HBO.
Unfortunately.
That's on HBO.
Yeah.
Okay. And another one that is at a movie theater, though, and it is about an entertainer, is Whitney, about Whitney Houston. I think, have you seen that, Amy?
Or, I haven't seen it. I do think it's at theaters in Northern Mass. I think I saw it there. So it is out and kind of around a biopic about her life.
Yeah.
Not to get too technical, but on the 6th of July, that's when Whitney opened up.
Okay.
And there was supposed to be a secondary expansion on the 13th, which would have included Red River. We were all ready to play it. On the Monday before that Friday, we're giving notice that the film company has decided to not go with the expansion and canceled all the dates.
Why would they do that?
Don't know. There was not an explanation. If I had any sort of feeling as to why, it wasn't performing the way they hoped it was going to, and just kind of retrenched on how they were going to distribute it. Bitter pill to swallow. We had to scramble for another movie to fill in its place rather quickly, but that's sometimes what occurs in the movie business.
Well, what was that movie?
Leave No Trace, which was a fabulous thing to find on short notice.
And what's that about? I don't know that film.
That is about how sometimes people exclude themselves from society. Survivalists, a man and his teenage daughter living rather basically illegally on other people's land, and they've been doing it for years, and it's about their discovery and how others try to reintroduce them into society.
And that's the writer-director of Winter's Bone, correct?
Yeah.
Not to bring the Oscar race discussion into things.
Yeah,
but
it's done by Deborah Granick, who discovered Jennifer Lawrence and put her in Winter's Bone. And there's a young actress that is in this film, Leave No Trace, who I think will have a good career ahead of her also.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. We're speaking about summer movies today, although we are talking about some movies that have yet to come out and came out in the spring, things that you might be looking forward to seeing both at theaters and at home. We'll be talking about some Netflix films in a little bit. We'll also be talking about movies suitable for families to see and kids. If you'd like to make a recommendation, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and grab your popcorn because we are talking about summer movies today. The good, the bad, and the meh. We want your recommendations. What should we see? What should we avoid? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. We're speaking with Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press, Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College, and Barry Steelman, program manager at Red River Theaters. In just a little bit, we're going to be talking about kids and family movies. And if you have a recommendation for fellow parents out there, what movies are good to bring the little ones to, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. I want to bring you into that conversation when it starts. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. But right now, we'll start with some heavier things. One of the heavier things that I wanted to talk about was there are two seem like really great movies focusing on race. One of them is Black Klansman, and the other is Sorry to Bother You. And I was wondering who here has seen these movies, or at least one of them. Anybody? No? Are you excited about this, Amy? Have you seen the
absolutely.
Trailers?
Oh, absolutely. So I think Sorry to Bother You, I think, again, Northern Massachusetts right now, and Friday it'll be in theaters kind of all over New Hampshire. Lakeith Stanfield, I think, is the star. Tessa Thompson, who I absolutely love. She was so great in Thor Ragnarok. Boots Riley, I believe, is the writer-director. I think this is a first film from him, I think. And this looks... So this is the kind of movie where as soon as I saw the trailer, I thought, this is awesome. I don't want to know any more about the plot. Because I feel like there's a twisty-turny bit of plot here. Danny Glover plays a character in it. I think the plot, at least what you see in the trailer, is the Lakeith Stanfield character working in telemarketing. And then Danny Glover kind of explains, hey, you're going to do a little better if you have a, quote, white voice. And so that it really grabs you kind of right there in the trailer. And like I said, I'm like, there is clearly more happening here. I don't want to learn more until I see this movie. It looks so good.
Let's hear a little bit of that trailer because it's great.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife. Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regal View.
It's funny, it's shocking, and it's also a comment on trying to pass in a certain society and how people respond to different races.
Well, I think comedies do that. That's always been one of the best ways to get a point across, is because if it's a quote-unquote a comedy, people let their kind of reservations down, and they don't think they're necessarily going to be taught anything, and I think you can get your point in a lot more easily that way. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm expecting, and I too like to go in as much as possible kind of blind. And just take the film for what it is. But I'm really looking forward to that one.
Is that your approach too as well, Barry?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to work in Boston for years and had the ability to see films that were screened for exhibitors. And that was probably the best way to watch movies, because more often than not, it was well before any reviews were written. Just a basic theme was usually presented to me as to what I was going to watch. And that was fabulous, to just sit there and let the movie wash over you and either be effective or reject it totally out of hand.
Mm-hmm. And Black Klansman 2 seems to be in a similar vein, though not as funny. Doesn't seem to be as funny.
Well, I think it's based on a true story.
Right.
And it's Spike Lee, which I just like, he brings such a different approach to things. So I'm really excited about that, too. And the trailer had some funny moments, though.
The premise is definitely outrageous. And I thought the movie looked like it should have some a really kind of barbed humor attached to it.
Yeah. The premise being, for the first time, this police department hires a black man who tries to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan, and then works with a white officer who is sort of the in-person, unmasked point person with David Duke and others in the Klan. And I don't know the ending. I couldn't possibly spoil it because I haven't seen it either. But I'm curious to see how it ends up. Listeners, give us a call if you have a recommendation. 1-800-892-6477. We promise we talk a little bit about Netflix and what Netflix has to offer. And there's a long list of stuff that's out or stuff that's coming out. Amy, can I ask you, what on Netflix is really getting you very excited?
Well, I did see that the, let me see if I can say all of this. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, which I guess is slated for August. And I've heard a little bit about this movie. It's based on a book. So another one of these kind of August. I always feel like there's got to be book club movies coming out in August. And I feel like this is one of those. I think Lily James is in this. This takes place in Great Britain. And I think it's... a little bit before during World War II, and then after the war. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to this. Hey, a good, costume drama, can't go wrong.
Yeah, in the trailer you see, Nazis marching down a British street and one woman shouting at them and then bombed out buildings. It doesn't look like a great situation in Britain. And then they have this literary society that sort of meets in secret, right? That's the idea?
Yes, and I think then kind of the framing device is Lily James's character, maybe a decade or so later, is kind of going back and learning their story. And so, which makes for, you get to have two stories on kind of a parallel track, a wartime story and then a post-war story.
Mm-hmm. Tom, what about you for Netflix? Anything you're looking forward to?
Well, once again, I'm pretty much mainstream Hollywood, so I just finished up my marathoning of The Walking Dead. Sorry about that. One of the things I equate our ability to stream stuff like through Netflix and Hulu and those kinds of things to about, 10 or 20 years ago when consumer video came out. And suddenly the ability to do what we in Hollywood have always been able to do is available to the average person. And I think they learn more when they shoot stuff at home, they find out, or at least are aware, why doesn't my stuff look like a professional thing? And then they can learn a little bit more about editing, learn a little bit more about sound design. What I love about the streaming services is there's something out there for everybody, and you've got the opportunity to teach yourself your own film history. And so while I don't have any necessarily recommendations on newer stuff, what I love about the streaming is that you can go back and watch pretty much anything that's ever been made out there. And so I think that's a great way for couch potatoes to increase their girth, I suppose.
Possibly, yeah. Barry, do you partake in the Netflix, or is that not allowed for employees of Red River Theaters?
I don't have Netflix available to me. And I guess I have a very jaundiced view of that system by which they release films. They claim to have theatrical runs, but they're very limited. They're very short. And afterwards, or even during that, I mean, I've looked forward to seeing some things on Red River's screen until I discovered that they're being handled by Netflix. And then I just close the door because I realize that for us, they're not going to be made available. And it disappoints me that they don't have a similar attitude as Amazon. Amazon makes things available theatrically across the board, and then they put them on their systems so that they can get benefit from them. So I guess I can't chime in here with any real positive comment about Netflix.
Well, it's interesting for sort of the casual movie viewer like myself to hear that not all streaming services are created equal in the eyes of an independent movie theater.
That is so true.
Yeah, I was unaware of that, Barry. I've always said that Hollywood is about one thing and one thing only, and that's the dollar. Do you think Netflix is doing that for the exclusivity, so that if you want to see something, you've got to go to Netflix?
I think the only reason that they are permitting any theatrical release is to try to get so that they can be involved with the Oscar, with the award system. And even that has been rebelled by the powers that be with the Oscar people, thinking that, you are looking for an Emmy. You're not looking for an Oscar.
Hmm. On Netflix, I should mention that there are a few seemingly humorous films to be seen. One of them is the Legacy of a White-Tailed Deer Hunter, the Josh Brolin film.
Yeah. Well, who is Josh Brolin? Yeah, has he been in anything this year?
He's a new guy.
He's having a good summer, I think.
This is a funny movie about it looks like a divorced dad who's trying to connect with his son by taking him white-tailed deer hunting. He also films his exploits, and the son is just not having it. Like, he's got his cell phone out in the woods, and it's making noise and scaring the deer away, and hijinks ensue, it seems. I don't know if anybody's seen this. It's been out since early July.
If you want to see that, don't read any of the reviews.
Really? The reviews aren't good?
The reviews are bad.
I've been noticing over the past few years is the number of high-caliber stars and directors and writers who do create product for the streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and those things. And I got to kind of wondering why, Barry, you kind of touched on it, that Hollywood is so, and the Oscars in particular, are so, they're pretty elitist. And I think venues like the streaming services allow these, for want of a better term, artists to create some media that they're just really interested in. It's another way for them to create their own pet projects and kind of experiment in that respect. So I think you find some of the more creative stuff online because the distribution companies are so closed to a lot of it.
Well, you know, from a moviegoer standpoint, though, I have kind of a short leash to what I can go see. You know, we were talking before about is this movie worth a babysitter and, you know, all of that. To be able to see some of these films kind of as they're being talked about at home, from a consumer point of view, I think that's really great. You know, there were times when you used to have to wait either a year for it to come to video or, you know, hope that it comes to a big city somewhere near you or even to, you know, to one of the few screens at a local art house theater. So I like that. You know, I feel like we're in flux, just like TV is, just like so much of media is right now. But to some degree, for moviegoers to be able to see these more limited release movies kind of as they're happening, I really appreciate that.
But I kind of dread the time I heard years ago that at some point, and I think it's still in the offing, that films will be released both in theaters and online at the same time. And I'm not looking forward to that. I like the opportunity to force myself to go out. It's much more of an experience to go out to the theaters and see it with a group of like-minded people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, an Avengers movie at home does not have quite the impact of an Avengers movie in the theater. You know, there are definitely movies. This weekend, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, the sequel to Mamma Mia. That movie was fun the first time I saw it, I think in part because of how everyone around me was reacting to the movie. Sure. So, you know, absolutely, I'm a big fan of going to see movies, but just to be able to also get some of those more limited release movies, you know, kind of when you can is great, I think.
I spoke with a lady yesterday who had seen the documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg in a theater, and a couple of nights ago she watched it on a TV set, and she said it didn't have the impact that it did in the movie theater. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be spectacular explosions, car chases. It can be something very simple and uncomplicated. And maybe there's something about the magic of seeing it with an audience or on a large screen and having it impact you in that way.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. We're asking you to chime in with your recommendations, your praise, your pans, whatever it happens to be. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. A couple other movies that are coming on Netflix. One's out and one's already out. One's to be out in August. Seems like it's great for young people. One is Alex Strangelove. It's about a young boy who is sort of learning that he's gay. And then To All the Boys I've Loved Before, about a young woman who is sort of learning how to be herself and also doing so while navigating a tricky social situation in which all her crushes have been publicly revealed. It looks funny, it looks charming, and also some embarrassing moments for her, but certainly interesting. Those are on Netflix as well. Listeners, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We asked for recommendations for kids' movies as well. We'll be talking about those. We're going to take a short break. This is The Exchange.
NHPR Summer Car Raffle is back.
Oh, my gosh. Are you for real?
You could drive away with $2,000 in gas cards to use at any gas station, or you could win the grand prize, $25,000 toward a new car.
No. I never won anything before. That's terrific.
I'm going to hyperventilate now.
But you can't win if you don't play. Get your raffle tickets now, just $50 each, or six for $150 at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and we're talking about movies today, the ones you've loved this season, the ones you didn't like so much, and the ones you're looking forward to, the ones that haven't come out yet. The number to call is 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Barry Steelman is with us. He's program manager at Red River Theaters. Also, Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College, and Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press. And we've promised a conversation on kids' movies, good movies for families to see. So let's dive right in. Amy, what do you think? What are the best movies for families to see with children?
Well, so unfortunately, I think the big movie, the big family release of this year is Incredibles 2, which was not one of my favorite movies. So this is, 14 years since the release of the original, The Incredibles, which I loved. That was great. This is one of the kind of the A-plus Pixar movies. Craig T. Nelson, Holly Hunter, Samuel L. Jackson do the voices for this, Sarah Vowell. And this movie just didn't quite live up, in my opinion. There's a lot of talking. I always look at a Pixar movie. Am I going to take my six-year-old daughter to this? There was you know, some cute stuff between a baby and a raccoon, for example. But there was a lot of talking, a little bit of darkness. And I just didn't feel like it did the characters justice. You know, you've got this family of superhero characters, and they're trying to figure out, you know, do superheroes still have a place in this world, which has kind of outlawed them because of all the collateral damage that they can cause. And the mom, Elastigirl, is trying to kind of break free and get superheroes back in the public's good graces. But the movie, to me, just didn't have the sparkle and the depth of the original.
Let's hear a little bit from the incredible sequel.
It's time to make some wrong things right. bring supers back into the sunlight? We need to change people's perceptions about superheroes, and Elastigirl is our best play.
Better than me?
So, Incredibles, perhaps too much talking for the young kids. Was that Bob Odenkirk of Better Call Saul that I just heard?
I believe
yes.
so. And Catherine Keener, I think, plays his sister. So a lot of good voice talent, at least.
Just kind of, for the kids. Okay.
Yeah, I was similarly
disappointed. And the other thing was the two-hour running time.
Yeah, long. I was similarly disappointed. I thought it was repetitive of the first film. And strangely enough, I thought, and you gave a quick description of the fact that it's about supers and you're not allowed to use your powers, it felt... just like the Avengers backstory that we've been hearing, where Captain America and Iron Man have this argument where, gee, can we be superheroes or do we have to follow what the government has to say? So, yeah, unfortunately, I was kind of glad to hear my colleague of similar venue because I thought I was just getting old and grumpy.
Well, that doesn't mean you're not getting old and grumpy.
One, however, that I was very surprised at recently opened up was Hotel Transylvania 3. I thought it was really pretty clever and fun, beautiful to look at, and it may have something to do with the fact that Adam Sandler, who voices over Dracula there, apparently neither directed nor wrote it. A lot of other people doing it. Uh-huh. And I loved the first one, thought the second one was kind of disappointing. So this going to Hotel Transylvania 3 summer vacation was where I thought we were going to have to pay our dues. Got to see this so you can talk about it. And I was pleasantly surprised.
So what is that one about?
This is about, if you've seen the Hotel Transylvania, it's about all of the monsters. It's animated, and all of the monsters live at Hotel Transylvania, mm-hmm. and that was the introduction in the first one. Lots of very clever, if you're familiar with the old Universal horror movies and things like that, a lot of very clever plays and puns on those things. The second one saw Dracula trying to get his daughter married. I thought that was kind of mundane. This is... Basically, you take everybody from Hotel Transylvania, stick them on a cruise ship, strangely enough, and Dracula has to try to find love. And it, you know, there's
so that sounds kind of uplifting for a monster movie.
Exactly, isn't it? There's the requisite for the kids. There's the requisite, potty humor and things like that. But it's not horror. It's not too much of it. And I was, again, really surprised at how kind of I haven't laughed out loud at a kids movie in quite a while. As I did with that.
Yeah. And Barry, what about you?
I plead guilty. I'm not really a big fan of animation. Never have been. But the only other thing that I see here that is coming up that looks like it could be directed at kids is a little ditty called Teen Titans Go.
Go to the movies.
To the movies.
Yeah.
Tom, are you familiar with this?
No, it's not out yet. And I don't know if it's – I was trying to look at the trailer. I don't know if it's about the Titans going to the movies. The feeling I got was – It's like four or five kids who want to be the Teen Titans, and okay. It has something to do with the movie.
And
that's
it's based on the TV show, right?
Sort
of a spinoff off of the TV show, and a lot of kind of meta superhero commentary. That looked cute. I don't know how young kid friendly, but definitely cute. Hey, for me, a person who sees a lot of superhero movies.
I'd say kids are getting short shrifted here.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, you know, one movie, so one of the best movies, I think, of 2018 has been Paddington 2, of all things.
Lots
and this
fun.
Came out earlier in the sort of the midwinter. Hugh Grant is the human person, and also Hugh Bonneville, sort of a mix of live action and CG. I've noticed that on some of the theaters that do kids' special summer series, that's on the schedule. So if you know of a theater or like a library or something that's doing movies for kids, that's one to definitely check out. Really well done, very sweet, and kind of really good for kind of all ages of kids. You know, if you've got a family of kids who kind of span elementary school and even younger, just a very good, sweet movie.
One of the last movies that was done under the Weinstein banner.
Yep.
And then
it was
sold to Warner Brothers, who distributed it finally to theaters.
And coming up soon, one of my favorite actors and one of my favorite characters, Christopher Robin.
Ewan
McGregor playing a grown-up Christopher Robin, and somehow Pooh comes back into his life. So I think that looks like loads of fun.
So not an animated film, or is it an
yes, again.
It's a mixture. Pooh isn't animated. I'm not exactly sure how they get him moving, but he looks like a physical bear. And I think Eeyore is with him. Everybody's there. So it's not like Pixar animation. Right, it's not a cartoon animation.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Listeners, we've still got some time left. If you'd like to chime in, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk a little bit about... a couple of horror films.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah. And then I want to squeeze in some time for the wah-wah, the disappointment movies that didn't quite measure up in your opinions. But yeah, so the horror films, one of them that I was watching the trailer for, it made me squirm. It was Adrift. It was about I think they're going across the Pacific Ocean, are they?
Yes, and this is stars Shailene Woodley. And actually, you know, I mentioned a couple of horror films on my list. It occurred to me they're all kind of female performances in the four. Toni Collette in Hereditary.
That's true, yeah.
Shailene Woodley in Adrift and Gabrielle Union in Breaking In.
And don't forget Emily.
Yes. And then, well, back a little bit earlier in the year, Emily Blunt in A Quiet Place.
My favorite movie of the year.
And so, you know, neat place to see strong female performances. In Adrift, they're going across the Pacific. It's her and her boyfriend. And about halfway, there's a big storm. And so then their boat is kind of broken up. He's injured. And they have to figure out how to get, and I think they have no navigational tools, and so they have to figure out kind of how to get to land.
And she's scanning the horizon, and there's nothing to be seen for miles and miles and miles, and just a terrifying sensation of being out there with limited resources, and I just get the heebie-jeebies watching that trailer.
Well, and you know, it's ocean, right, and blue sky, and that's not how you think of horror, but yes, sitting through it, it felt like a horror movie.
Maybe that's what made it so scary, is that it's daylight, it's supposed to be a safe and fun environment, and this was not fun at all. That was very scary.
Yes.
And then Hereditary, too. I mean, a story, I guess, about the kind of evils that your parents can pass on. I didn't get the nuance from the trailer of how those things are passed on.
You don't get the nuance,
but boy,
for a
scary.
Good point of the movie, I think.
Really?
Because it kind of holds its cards close to its vest for a while.
I thought it was, for the first half hour, I thought it was one of the most boring films I've ever seen.
Huh.
And then I forget what exactly happened, but it spiked right up. It had, for me, it had some of the most frightening horror images I've ever seen. And then it resolved in just an insipid explanatory character. I felt like an evil Bond villain was explaining to Bond what was happening at the end so you could figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's a very mixed bag, Hereditary.
Well, let's talk briefly about the disappointments because we've got a little bit of time left. I know there's some fierce debate in this room over whether or not Ocean's 8 was good or not, so I think I'm just going to shut up and let you guys work it out. Ocean's 8, yes, good or bad?
Okay, I'll make my case for Ocean's 8.
Okay.
I had so much fun watching this movie. So this is kind of in-universe. We talk about all these, you know, movie universes. This is sort of in the same universe as the George Clooney, Steven Soderbergh Ocean's movies. Sandra Bullock plays Debbie Ocean, the sister of the George Clooney Ocean character. She gets out of prison and has this plan for a diamond heist. She partners up with Cate Blanchett. They have fantastic chemistry. I loved their chemistry. They were just sort of sparkling the whole time they were on screen together. They gather this gang of fellow con artists, Awkwafina, Rihanna, Mindy Kaling, Sarah Paulson, Helena Bonham Carter. Anne Hathaway plays the actress who's going to wear this very expensive necklace to the Met Gala where they're going to steal it. And I just felt like all these actresses were having a great time. It was infectious, made me have a great time. The movie was very, I thought, clean and sort of you know, stuck to the heist for the most part. And so I had a blast. Explain why I'm wrong.
I just went, I went to this exclusively. Well, I love all the Ocean's movies, but what phenomenal star power. And these women, I love these actresses. And I was just disappointed. I didn't think it delivered with the potential I thought that it had. And I found the story to be kind of reminiscent of a zillion other movies that I'd seen. So I thought with the ability that these actresses had and, you know, the money behind it, I was just kind of disappointed with what it didn't deliver for me.
Well, want to wrap things up here, but I wanted to say thank you very much for sharing your thoughts not only on Ocean's 8, but on all the films that are available to be seen and will be available to be seen shortly. Thank you very much, everybody. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and the conversation about movies continues online at our Facebook page and at nhpr.org.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.